So, Pete,
welcome to the show.
Yes.
I'm very well. Every week I'm the same, really.
Yeah, I know. I should start differently. Yeah. Okay, I'll start differently.
Okay, so
how are your eyes?
My eyes. Just like the year, 2020.
Whoa, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Smeichen dropping the comedy. I would say, unfortunately, that my eyes are also like the year 2020, getting worse, it seems, every month. As people at home can tell, I do wear glasses. Right. I'm nearsighted. You can see very well and always have been able to, right?
I can see a lot of things. I can see everything far away.
Yeah.
I can see through a lot of things like, your cheesy openings. But one thing I can't, see through.
Yes.
What do you think?
Black holes.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, by definition, very difficult to see through, right? Black. They're large. They're, you know, it's a massive mass that really, I think only theoretically people believe we could see through. But again, all due respect to you, all due respect to me, we're not the people who are going to be able to answer that question. So that's why we have experts on the show. And today we do have an expert from the University of Southern California, a professor from the Physics and Astronomy Department. You know him, you love him. He's a friend of the show, Professor Clifford Johnson.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to What If Discussed.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Well, we're good. We're kind of debating. I don't know if we're debating, but we're trying to figure out.
You'd know if I was debating.
Could you see through a black hole? And obviously, this is theoretical. So, you know, this is the time to be a theoretical physicist. Let's start with Ken. What would you see if you looked into a black hole?
That's a great question. So, well, to a first approximation, in my, you know, physicist way of saying things, you wouldn't see anything coming from the inside, because in some ways, by definition, at least in classical physics, the black hole is not letting anything escape from it. Now, one of the things people think about a lot in recent times has been black holes, say at the, when you combine them with quantum physics, because when quantum physics is included, there is some sort of mechanism, which goes back to Stephen Hawking, who you may have heard of, right? Who said and showed that when you combine quantum physics with black holes, there's a sense in which they radiate stuff out. And there's a way of thinking about it that means that in some sense, the stuff is coming out, energy is coming out from the black hole. It's losing energy. Now, one perspective says it's just some quantum stuff happening near the horizon and it comes out and it isn't really coming from the inside. But another perspective says that in some sense, it is telling you stuff about the inside of a black hole. So people are very excited about trying to understand the full quantum story of a black hole, because it tells you essentially about the fate of the black hole, the fate of what fell in ultimately. That stuff all has to come out in this process by which the black hole evaporates, if that is a real thing. Now, I should say that black holes that we see in astrophysics, made from collapsed stars or even larger, their evaporation time and the evaporation effects of the quantum physics are essentially negligible. They would take so long to lose any significant amount of energy that you'd wait longer than the lifetime of the universe. So this is very much in the realm of what if in the theoretical physics world, where you're thinking about the fate of perhaps small black holes if they were to be discovered.
I love that you use the term "what if." It's very, yes, very rare that
snuck
we get a guest.
Stuck in a plug.
It's the show. What if? So that kind of covers what we would see, what might be in a black hole, and what might be emanating from a black hole. But if we take this visionary theoretical journey right to its conclusion, what would we see on the other side of a black hole?
Oh well, that's an interesting question. part of the question would then be, I would have to go, well, what do you mean by the other side? If you think of it as,
is there another side?
Yes,
it's a three-dimensional hole, right? Mm. And one of my gripes that I have sometimes with how these sorts of things are portrayed in movies and stuff is, They tend to think of it as like a circle, and then you sort of fall in and you go somewhere. but where it's more of a sphere. You can approach it from many different directions and you'd go in. So the other side is sort of a weird thing to think about, because it isn't, you don't mean, I think, the other side so much as you mean the other place it may go to. And so you could imagine, what if craziness, that there's another spherical object somewhere else, which is like the other end of that hole. And you would then emerge from out, coming out of that, and that would be like the exit. Does that make sense?
Oh, wow.
Like a wormhole type thing?
Well, those are among the things that people have speculated about, and you can find solutions of the equations of relativity, which is where we study black holes, that give you those scenarios. But the plumbing is higher dimensional than we normally think of, right? You think, for example, of a garden hose, right? It has one end, and that's essentially a circle, a disc that you go into, and then you come out the other end. Instead, you would have a whole sphere, which is like a higher dimensional circle, and then you come out a sphere somewhere else if you were to engineer a wormhole. As far as we know, that's fraught with physics difficulty. Real stable wormholes are not thought to be possible as far as we understand, but it's fun to think about them. And of course, we use them in science fiction a lot.
Yeah. And Einstein left the door open for that, didn't he?
Well, he not only left the door open, he helped discover the door, right? The original wormhole solution was discovered by Einstein and Rosen. And there was a paper where they actually pointed out that you could, by examining the geometry of the standard black hole solution that's used to study real astrophysical black holes, you can actually see that it contains the possibility of indeed going what seems to be into the black hole and then coming out another side, and it's like you're like exiting from a different black hole, or it's the same black hole, up to you how you think about it. And that was the wormhole solution, otherwise known as the Einstein-Rosen bridge, bridge between two different sort of regions. But as they already observed, you'd have to do things like move faster than the speed of light to traverse that wormhole before it collapsed. And they tend to collapse before you can do anything with them.
If anybody's seen the opening, or seen the show Raised by Wolves on HBO Max, I believe, but the opening has them essentially doing exactly what you just described, going through, popping out another sphere. We're checking out. You can watch, I believe it's that just the opening is on YouTube. It's worth checking out. It's kind of an illustrative vision of that theoretical idea. Theoretical being sort of the key word when we're talking about big what ifs, especially something like black holes and looking through them. But is it possible that these things will be a little less theoretical and a little more concrete as we develop new technology? I know that there's the Event Horizon Telescope and the Virgo Cluster. You know, there's other bigger telescopes. Do you anticipate we're going to be able to learn a lot more from these new eyes on these black holes?
Well, the Event Horizon Telescope is a wonderful example, as you say, of what you can do with new technology. And it's, in some ways, it's new technology combined with old technology in the following sense. What the Event Horizon Telescope is, it's actually a network of existing telescopes, and new ones being built will be added. It's a network of telescopes all around the Earth that you connect together by, so you're getting them all to look in the same direction at the same object. And so that essentially gives you one massive telescope the size of the Earth, which is what you need in order to see something very far away in great detail. And the technological aspect there is that you need to somehow combine all that information from all those different telescopes in the right way with amazing computer technology, amazing collaboration by hundreds of scientists, and they collaborate in order to combine these data using modern algorithms and super fast computers to do that, and then essentially turns it into one giant telescope. So indeed, the landmark thing that you probably all saw in the news, what was it, last year? I think it was last year, right? That first image of the black hole event horizon, which I remind you, because people often miss this fact, it's the first time we're seeing, in any extended sense of the word seeing, a black hole, or at least the event horizon, the shadow of the black hole against the stuff that's glowing around it. Every other image you've ever seen depicting a black hole has been an artist's impression. And it's easy to forget that, because you know, you see these wonderful artist impressions of matter coming off one star and falling into a black hole. It looks super realistic. An artist did that. Except in this case, this really is real data turned into what it would look like. And so we're going to learn a lot more about black holes that way. And I think, you know, whether or not the business of whether you can see into it and see out the other side or what have you, which is probably going to remain speculative in some sense, we're going to learn a lot about the black holes themselves and how they dominate the physics in the core of our galaxy, how they interact with the stuff there, how different galaxies, black holes are different from each other as we start imaging other black holes. It's going to be huge, the amount of stuff we're going to learn from that. And it is awesome that we're really looking at the shadow of a black hole with our own eyes. For the first time in our history, in our civilization's history.
Spectacular.
Super cool. Crazy times.
Professor, thanks very much for taking us through this speculative vision quest. Where can people go to find your work?
Well, it's probably easiest to find me on either Instagram or Twitter or Facebook by just Google my name and physics, Clifford Johnson Physics. That's the easiest way, rather than trying to figure out what my handle is.
I was just going to say that's what I did, and it brought me down the whole Clifford Johnson rabbit hole too. So to your point, it's the best place to start. Clifford Johnson Physics, maybe USC as well.
Yeah, and you'll find, like I said, lots of thoughts, discussions on my blog, images I share of physics ideas or other things, other activities I get up to. And you'll find your way maybe also to my nonfiction graphic book about the nature of the universe, which I wrote and drew a couple of years ago, published by MIT Press. There's a lot of ideas in there about space and time and quantum physics, a little bit about black holes and how you can use them as time machines, for example, and things like that.
Thank you, Professor Johnson. In quantum physics, there's something called the observer effect, which is very interesting in that literally what you see and what I see of the same thing might be different.
Ooh.
So when you apply it to especially things as theoretical as black holes, when we're asking, well, what would you see if you saw through a black hole? Well, of course, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, as they say. Who knows what you're going to see? But at least when you talk to somebody like Professor Johnson, you at least get a better guidance system on what you'd be looking for. Because here I'm asking that question in a two-dimensional sense, and I hadn't even thought that, of course, that's idiotic.
Yeah, they say there's no dumb questions, but maybe that was a dumb question. Yeah, no, I always thought, too, that black hole is just it's a hole.
Yes.
And you fall into it.
Idiotic.
Not realizing it's spherical or it's three-dimensional.
Yes.
Of course, it's not a black hole. It's a black orb.
Yes, exactly.
Really?
And he sort of helped us understand that and helped us understand a few other things.
Right. Well, we'll be seeing more black holes. Not coming up anytime soon, but as our technology gets stronger, as we send Hubble or Webb telescopes into space and get a better look and usher in basically a new era of space exploration. And we'll also explore a little bit more with Professor Johnson on the extended audio podcast. Now, if you're watching us and you want to hear more, well, just click on the link below and you can join the extended audio podcast. If you are already listening to the audio podcast, don't worry, there's nothing to click on. Just keep listening. We'll be with you in just a second. Now, if you are watching on video and you're leaving us, well, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on another What If Discussed.
Welcome back to What If Discussed. We are talking black holes, looking into black holes, looking through black holes, everything black hole related with USC's famed professor in the physics and astronomy department and friend of the show here at What If Discussed, Clifford Johnson. Professor Johnson, we talked earlier about the exciting, it's hard to even overstate how crazy that was earlier this past year, last year, seeing those first images of a black hole for the first time. I believe it's about a year from now the James Webb Telescope will finally be launched. And we've talked to a few different people on the show about, you know, what, how much of a game changer that is. I'm curious to get your perspective on that as it relates to black holes, but really just the whole game of physics and our understanding of the universe. What do you expect to see, or we will be able to see, with the James Webb Telescope?
Well, let me take a broad view of this and reflect on our history as a species when we're looking up in the sky. Every time we make a leap in terms of the kinds of ways we look in the sky, or the kinds of the next level of technology that we use, we make a leap in our understanding of the universe. By which I mean, it goes back, of course, we're just looking up with our eyes, but then very famously, of course, Galileo, who didn't invent the telescope but was an early adopter, as it were, he looked with a very moderate telescope up into the heavens, and the things he saw and reported changed our view of our role in the universe and what it was like, and even what the universe was. And that has continued as we look up with increasingly complex instrumentation, and as we look in different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. So that's the optical. When we started looking with radio waves, we understood even more of the universe. There are things that are not glowing because of light, visible light, but they're glowing in the infrared or the ultraviolet or the X-ray. And there are telescopes that are devoted to those different spectra. And then, of course, as you get more and more light collecting power in the visible or wherever, you'll see new things. I expect the same thing to happen with the James Webb Telescope, combined then with something else that we have begun to do as a species, which is remarkable, which is to crunch data and to look for signals in huge amounts of data. So it will produce, it'll map the sky in unprecedented detail. It'll tag all kinds of different objects, known or unknown. And then various scientists will go in over the years to come, and they will mine those data. And as we get better and better at trying to understand how to find things in those large data sets, we're going to discover all kinds of things. People have been doing that, for example, with old data sets, where they go back and they use things like machine learning and things like that, and find that there are all kinds of phenomena that we had not seen in those large amounts of data, old images from the sky. So that'll happen. So it's going to be an amazing discovery machine. And it's also going to be a machine that helps us nail down various existing questions about objects we already know are there. So that's sort of the broad sort of big picture look on how revolutionary it's going to be. Another revolution I should mention, by the way, especially in connection to black holes, was the gravitational wave discovery of a few further years ago. Most famously, the machine LIGO and its partner Virgo and others to come on stream. That's essentially looking, you can think of those as telescopes, but they're not using light. They're using gravitational waves, which are ripples in space-time. And we've learned a lot about black holes because of these new ways of looking in the sky. And again, it's sort of, we look at the sky in a new way and we discover amazing new things. So now, routinely, those machines are reporting black holes colliding with each other, black holes of masses we hadn't expected to see or existed. And that's really mapping out again how, you know, our understanding of new aspects of the universe. So discovery, these are discovery machines. And that's one of the most awesome parts of science to be in, where you just turn on a new machine and see what you can see.
Must have been incredible for astronomers and anybody who's been following, you know, deep space to finally see those images of a black hole. You talked about the Event Horizon telescope earlier and how much collaboration and technology that goes into that. And then the James Webb, obviously, eons ahead of where Galileo and Hans Lippershey, the inventor of the telescope in 1608, eons ahead of what they could have seen in their meager pieces of glass.
Only 400 years ago, though.
Yeah.
Wow, eh?
Yeah. Professor, what was your imagination of a black hole before you saw these images? You mentioned the gravitational waves were able to formulate some sort of idea, but what did you have a picture of in your mind of a black hole before we saw the image?
Well, one of the questions was exactly what would that sort of shadow of the black hole look like? Would it just be a perfect black disk against the glowing background? Would it not be a disk shape? Would it be some other sort of geometrical shape due to some kind of interplay of the black hole geometry and the light that is in the vicinity of the black hole? So people were pretty sure it would be a circular shape, but there was the possibility that something else, some deviations from that could have been present, which may have taught us something about what gravity does in the neighborhood of a black hole. It's always important to confirm your expectations, even the most obvious ones, and just make sure that that thing you think is obviously true really is true, because sometimes that's where you discover new things. And so it was important to form that image and just confirm that our Einsteinian view of gravity, which is, after all, only barely 100 years old, was correct. Now, it's still the case that there could be all kinds of phenomena that we will discover that will tell us that actually Einstein's gravity needs some correction near a black hole. But what you need to do first is sort of get the basics right. And that's what that has been doing for us. Similarly with the colliding black holes that you learn about from LIGO, the gravitational wave observations, those turn out to be consistent with Einstein's gravity, but it's being tested in an area that's extreme compared to some of the other tests. A black hole and another black hole, those two event horizons are colliding with each other and merging into a new black hole. So there's a possibility that some new stuff could come from that. So between those two very different ways of now getting to grips with actual real black holes, however indirectly they still are, they are real windows to the edge of our understanding of how gravity works. And so there's exciting possibilities, which, you know, could mean that we make some new discoveries about gravity in the coming years.
Super exciting. Cool. And we look forward to having some breaking news here on what if discussed when those discoveries are made. Keep doing what you're doing, Professor. It's that type of curiosity and fascination that drives human evolution. I think people forget that. You know, we're talking about Galileo back in the day. Yeah. He's out there doing what he's doing.
Hans Lippershey.
You know, old Hans. And here we are today contemplating what's next as far as our discovery about the universe we live in. It's wild, crazy times, fun times to be alive. Thank you for joining us today on What If Discussed, Professor. We'll catch up with you down the line.
It's a real pleasure. And don't forget to go out there with a moderate pair of binoculars, not so different from the power Galileo had, and look up at Jupiter, look up at Saturn. You can see the moons of Jupiter. That is an awesome thing, right? From your house with a moderate pair of binoculars, you can see what Galileo saw. That is, you know, 400 years old, sure, but still mind-boggling that you can see those four main moons of Jupiter with your own eyes. Wow. It's an awesome thing. So go out and do that.
I just got goosebumps.
We will. I will.
Great stuff.
I'm going to go out tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Great stuff, Professor. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
And I love that guy. Because that's it. I mean, literally, he's describing, right? Like, think about that. I don't know this, but I'm going to guess that the binoculars we have today, probably in the area code of strength of the telescope that Galileo had and Hans had in 1608.
Like, yeah.
So I would imagine, to his point, you looking up in the sky today with binoculars, forget about even a great telescope, you're literally seeing exactly what he saw back in the day and started to formulate all these theories about the universe.
But did he know what he was seeing?
Well, I don't. This is, you know, if you go far, you know, obviously this is a bit of a story for another what if. But I mean, you know, we know that the Egyptians were obviously looking up at star systems because of the way the pyramids are built in alignment with the Orion star system. There's a lot of evidence around the world that people were always looking up at the stars. And that's the interesting thing.
Now today, we're all looking,
looking down at our phones. But I guess the glass half full, there's some cool apps on there where we can look at, you know, NASA sites and space.com and other things to see, or what if, and watch cool videos about this type of stuff. But again, I know we've talked about it a lot, and I'm almost getting sick of asking the question or hearing myself ask it. But it goes without saying that this James Webb thing is such a potential game changer.
Game changer. It's going to change the time space, the way we see time space.
It's historic, right? Pete. And even to what, like, think about what Professor Johnson said. Up until this past year, I didn't know this, and I'm sure most people didn't know this. Every image you were seeing of a black hole, you were like, oh, there's the old black hole. It looks
somebody
like
it
must be from Hubble or something. No, just some artist rendition because we hadn't gotten technologically that far. Well, after post James Webb, to me, it's almost going to be like a BC before Christ, after, like, I would imagine in 100, like, you're going to be able to not just speculate on so much of, like, think about it.
We've had some good shots, though. Like, oh, Cassini, like, and all those probes, like all that sort of stuff.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, I mean, I remember when the Hubble images came out, man. It was like, what? You know, we've seen some stuff of, like, Saturn.
You never dreamed you were going to see past the moon. Or
you were seeing galaxies far away. You were seeing these colors, these nebula or whatever, however you say it. And it was a game changer. This, you expect to be exponentially more. I think in a lot of ways, it'll take what has always had to be theoretical, physics, so much because you had to guess, or you had to go with math, or you had to with whatever. I would imagine now a lot of the theoretical physics around black holes and everything else will be accelerated to the point of less theoretical and more practical, because we won't have to guess anymore. We'll be able to actually see it with our own eyes.
We can see it, yeah. We'd like to thank Professor Clifford Johnson for joining us again today and talking all about the possible transparency of a black hole. I don't think it's possible, is it? If you want to hear more from what's going on behind the scenes here at What If, well, why don't you sign up for the What If Explorers Club newsletter? There's tons of cool science stuff. You find out what we're doing behind the scenes, find out what kind of videos we're putting out this week. Maybe you'll find out what's on next week's podcast. I don't know right now, but if you sign up for the What If Explorers Club newsletter, you could find out. Go to whatifshow.com today and sign up. That is whatifshow.com. Again, thanks again for joining us on What If Discussed. We'll see you next time.